Welcome back, everyone. This is the Red and Yellow Kingdom podcast. I'm your host, Scott, joined by Rich with your average everyday Chiefs talk. All of our episodes are available on most streaming platforms. Just search for the Red and Yellow Kingdom podcast. You can also check us out on our social media pages, such as Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for our latest episodes and up-to-date Chiefs news. All right, Rich, so we are actually back now, getting here into the season. Obviously, training camp is now pretty much officially underway. The Chiefs, at least pretty much the whole team, I believe, have now arrived in St. Joe, Missouri at the Missouri Western State University for their training camp. You have any days that you might think about you might go to attend while they're going to be there?
We were just talking about that, right? And I have never attended the pancake day, the pancake breakfast, which is here in 2 days on Wednesday. Mm-hmm. So hopefully trying to get in and see if didn't miss a deadline on trying to attend that one. I've seen so many, right? Even before I was a season ticket member, that the family fun day isn't that big of a thing for me anymore. I used to really enjoy the days where it's not like a certain kind of event. It's just a practice day and you can watch. So mm-hmm. I think the Chiefs are opening that back up where you can just watch a practice like you could before COVID. So if maybe on like a wide receiver, the wide receiver practice day is when I'll head out or something like that. So, you know, I always like to watch the specific position battles on positions that I really enjoy. So wide receivers and defensive backs are usually always the ones.
Do they normally give you like days is when they normally do that? I didn't know in the past that they said like, hey, this is the day that we're going to focus on this position and all that. I didn't know they did that in the past.
Yeah. So, and if you go to the Chiefs website on the training camp home and then you go to the full schedule, it breaks it out there. The thing is, it's more of, I mean, it's not like they just practice, right? It's more of who will do the autographs.
I see.
So it's not like they just one specific position group trains. It's just who comes out and actually signs stuff. So for me, it's always cool just to try to see if we can get, especially since we got a new wide receiver core. So maybe that'll be the day I'll go out, but it's really just depending on schedule and then see who wants to tag along.
Right. So so obviously what you've mentioned is on Wednesday is really the first practice that's open up to fans, but it's only open to season ticket members. And they normally do like a pancake breakfast like one time every year for the season ticket members. And that's all, like I said, that's Wednesday. I was thinking about going too as well, but I think we had just, like I said, we just talked about, and it looks like there might not be any tickets available. So we'll maybe have to see if, there might be some, still some left or maybe able to get some. The only problem with me is because, obviously we work during the week. So, I mean, chances of me being able to go are probably not that great anyways. But they normally have those on weekends, which is weird. They have a second season ticket member only one on Tuesday, August 9th. And I think the second one they normally do like sandwiches. I think it's like barbecue or something, I think, is normally for those. They do. They didn't list it on the site this year for doing that. So maybe they're not doing that. But normally it's the second one. They do some kind of like barbecue or whatnot for that. I'm kind of with you. It's because I would normally like to go, but it seems all the key dates that I'd like to go to this year is normally during the week. And then obviously you got Family Fun Day, which is Sunday, August 7th. And I think I might be out of town, so I probably missed that. But like you mentioned, Family Fun Day, I think, is not the same it used to be. They make it out to be it. But it'd be kind of interesting to check out, maybe at least one or two that I normally try to go to every year. Also, you got, looks like Monday, August 1st is Chiefs Alumni Day. I don't know if you do anything special or just some of the old Chiefs players show up too for that day. As far as training camp itself, I believe on Friday, all the rookies, I think quarterbacks and selected injured players showed up Friday. And I believe the rest of the team showed up yesterday, I want to say, because I think they do practice today and tomorrow, but it's not open to the public. Like I said, obviously Wednesday with the season ticket member one being the first one, and then Thursday it's open up to everybody, I believe. So, hopefully, like I said, get out there at least one or two times. It's It's actually probably good they do it early in the morning, even though towards the end of training camp or in the end of the day, I'm sorry, that they do practice. It's starting to get a little hot. So it's probably best. I'm glad they don't do two a days like they used to do. And they used to do like one in the morning and one in the afternoon, kind of like the way they did at River Falls, Wisconsin, which was a little bit, I would say a little bit cooler when it was there. And obviously that was, years ago, and, summer's gotten crazy everywhere, right? So like it's actually like, it doesn't matter where you're at. It seems like it's like hotter than it ever has been, even if it was like, 4 or 10 years ago. So, but that is pretty much like the training camp schedule. I believe it goes all the way into Thursday, August 18th is actually the final practice they have. I think they break camp after that. So just real quick, in between that, they do have a preseason game in Chicago, which is Saturday, August 13th. They're playing the Bears, I believe at like noon that day. So that's the only game they really have during practice or during training camp. And then their second preseason game is Saturday, August 20th at Arrowhead against the Washington Commanders at 3 p.m. And then their final game at Arrowhead, Thursday, August 25th against the Packers, which is also Arrowhead, which is a night game at 7 p.m. So that is pretty much your training camp and preseason schedule. The most probably important thing that obviously we'll get into more and more of our episodes getting closer to the season is the roster cuts, right? So you got your roster cut deadlines, the first one being Tuesday, August 16th, which will go from the 90-man roster they have now to 85 players. Then the next week, Tuesday, August 23rd, will go from 85 to 80. So a little bit like about 5 players a week until you get your final cut on Tuesday, August 30th. That will go from your 80 all the way to your 53-man roster, which is obviously the bigger one right before the season starts. So any thoughts on any of that I kind of went through as far as any kind of those key dates you're looking forward to?
And of course, right, the final one is always an important one. Right, I think for the most part, when you're a winning team, amongst the best in the NFL, you have most of your roster figured out. It's spot 50, 51, 52, 53. Are you carrying a 6th wide receiver? Are you carrying a 7th or a 6th defensive back? Are you carrying 3 running backs, 3 quarterback, those kind of things. So those are always the cool ones, right? And if you are able to follow the camp closely throughout the entire session, it's cool to see how that works out. But like I said, for the most part, most of the roster is already filled out. So, the big one for me was Justin Ross, right? Was he going to make the 53-man roster, be on the practice squad? But today the Chiefs announced he is on IR for the year. So he'll be on IR for the year, and he'll basically do a Malik Herring. And so Malik Herring, the defensive end that we signed out of Georgia last year in rookie free agency, it'd be interesting to see if he makes the roster this year, if he doesn't do practice squad or if he's healthy. So, for me, it's like I said, it's that 8:30, 53-man roster deadline.
I was going to mention the Justin Ross situation because it's funny because we're like, oh, we're just talking about training camp, and that's the only it's the first news we get, and it hasn't really officially started, at least to our eyes, it hasn't. But and obviously, it did start to the Chiefs' eyes today, and that was obviously they placed Justin Ross on the IR, and they signed 2 different tackles. We'll lead more into that later, probably why we signed 2 tackles, but that was the first news so far of training camp. So more to come on that for sure. Though I'm pretty sure next episode we'll have a bunch of more up to date news on so far how training camp has gone. So leading into our main topic for today was basically wanted to kind of talk about what kind of the top position battles or key things on the Chiefs rosters that Chiefs fans might be looking out for during training camp or things that we might want to see happen. I'll send it over to you, Rich, to kind of break out what you think might be top 3 position battles or what do you think you'd like to see in training camp.
Yeah, for sure. So I'll start off right with the prime position, the most energetic, electric, the most entertaining, which is the wide receiver position for us, right? So we head into camp, obviously losing our top wide receiver for the last few years in Tyreek Hill, as he is off to with the Miami Dolphins. And, you know, we've brought in names like Juju Smith-Schuster, MVS, since his name is really long. Of course, you know, you brought in the rookie Sky Moore. So for me, that's the biggest one, right, is who's number one, who's number two, who's number three. And I'm sure it's going to be some sort of rotation. Obviously, Andy is going to be able to move folks around a little bit more than maybe what he has in the past, just because I think maybe on the surface, we don't have anyone as talented as Tyreek Hill, but we have more depth overall, right, in comparison to, let's say, anything that Patrick has had with us so far in his tenure as our quarterback. So that to me is going to be the interesting part. Again, right, is it Juju's going to be more of the slot possession wide receiver? Is he going to play out wide, you know, in the X or in the Y spot? What's MVS going to do? We know that he's a speedster. You know, he's arguably one of the, from a numbers perspective, he's one of the top deep playmakers in the NFL. And then, you know, what's McColl going to do? What's his role? We've constantly talked about the last few years about him stepping up, and he has gotten better every year. If I'm not mistaken, this is a contract year for him. So that's the biggest one to me is, you know, what role is McColl playing, MVS, Juju, and then where does the rookie fall in? I think everyone really, really likes what Sky Moore brings to this team on paper. Now we actually get to see it in play. So that's the biggest one for me. So, you know, when talking about wide receivers, what are your thoughts there on that position battle?
So a quick question, because I'll throw it back out to you. How many of these, I mean, I know we'll get into probably more of it later and all that stuff, but just kind of like off your head or off topic or off what you think, is how many wide receivers do you think will probably make the team?
So I think at minimum you have to go at minimum five, right? It kind of depends with the running back situation, right? Because running back, you technically should have two. Well, I mean, you're going to have two. Sorry, that was kind of a statement.
Right.
So you're going to have two for sure, as in CEH and Ronald Jones. What's going to happen with Pacheco, right? And any other running back that might come about. So if you take two there, then that opens up another extra spot, you know. We'll obviously have a fullback, but then what do you do with tight end? What do you do with offensive line? So I think for sure, at minimum, we'll have five. The fifth spot is, to me, that's going to be that training camp battle. You know, that's going to be that 52, 53-man spot.
Right.
Who ends up taking that? And, yeah, to be honest, I mean, it's as up in the air as can be because, I mean, I think it's kind of safe to say we'll have Juju, MVS, McColl, Sky, and then from there, right, is it Fountain? You know, like I said, I really wanted Justin Ross to be in that mix.
Is it Josh Gordon?
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously Josh Gordon, Corey Coleman, right? He's someone that, you know, I think we've kind of said is more of a training camp body.
And then Cornell Powell, yeah.
And I've been reading that Cornell Powell in the, 3 days that they've been at camp. He's been doing really, really good. So, so yeah, who knows, you know. Six, maybe they take Gordon and Powell. So it looks like it'll be Juju, MVS, McColl, Sky, Josh Gordon, and then that sixth spot will be between maybe a Fountain and a Powell. So I think that's a pretty safe statement right there.
No, I agree with you as far as wide receiver being probably the definitely biggest impact of what we want to see because, like you said, you know, those four that you mentioned, they're solid. Like, those four are definitely making the team. There's no doubt about it, right? You know, bar injury or anything in training camp, they're definitely making the team. But outside of that, when you look at five, if you want to keep six, you know, that's where you look at those four other guys with Josh Gordon, Dreece Fountain, Cornell Powell, and Corey Coleman is where that battle is going to be all training camp long. But just not even just that, but just kind of like you mentioned where it's pretty much, you know, other than McColl Hardman, like you said, you know, he's been showing steps to be that guy, you know, the main guy we would wanted to see, like when we first drafted him. He's been doing that a lot as of late. So, you know, see if he continues to prove, you know, and step into, you know, a bigger role, like I said, this year coming up. But it's pretty much, like I said, an overhaul of the whole wide receiver group. So that will be the most exciting for sure for us to see. So what do you have for the probably the second biggest impact do you think that people might want to watch this training camp?
So I think, and maybe this might even be one, is what are we going to do on the offensive line? So we know that we're, barring any injury, we're good at center with Creed Humphrey. We're good at right guard with Trey Smith. We are technically good at left guard with Joe Thuney. I say technically because, you know, there's a talk that he could play left tackle. Andy Reid was quoted saying that earlier, this training camp, that he can step in and without any hesitation, they have full confidence in his ability to play left tackle. So for me, it's what do we do in the absence of Orlando Brown Jr. at left tackle? And then who secures that right tackle spot? You've got Lucas Niang. You've got, I always mess up his name. I always want to say Kinlan, but it's Darius Kennard.
Darian Kennard?
Yeah, Darian. Yeah. See, I always mess up his Darian Kennard, even though I like really followed the guy a lot when he was through his draft process, but for some reason I always mess up his name. And then you got Jaron Christian, who I personally really, really like at the right tackle spot. I know he's been in Washington and Houston, which are two really bad teams. When you're on a good team, you know, things seem to work out a little bit more. So, again, that to me is the – you could say arguably it's 1A or 1B on position battle for our team, right? It's what are we doing? And we know Andy Reid, Airbnb, they have a plan there. They knew when trading for Orlando Brown that this was going to be a possibility, maybe not as high as it actually happened. But for me, yeah, it's what do we do at left tackle and right tackle and how does that come about? And then what also happens on some of these depth spots, right? Like with Darian Kennard, does he end up siding in at guard? Does he start at right tackle? And then what happens, you know, a trickle down effect from there? So offensive line, we know we've got the center of that offensive line set up. So what happens on the ends?
Yeah, because, you know, like Creed Humphrey's there for sure. Trey Smith is there, right, for sure. Other than that, everything else could switch because even though, Joe Thuney is a left guard, you know, like I said, he could play left tackle. And that's what, like you said, Andy Reid said too. So, outside of that, it's just kind of up in the air. I mean, obviously, Andrew Wiley, I think, automatically slide into that right tackle just because he had played a lot, throughout the season when Lucas Niang got hurt and was kind of struggling as well. So, outside of that, like you said, you have that Darian Kennard. Well, you know, what will he play or what kind of role will he be in there? But that's the thing, too. Like I said, if Joe Thuney moves to left tackle, just say, for instance, that happens, right? Is Darian Kennard going to be the left guard or is Nick Allegretti probably going to be automatically starter? I would think Allegretti will be automatically the starter at that point just because of his experience. And he's, you know, started a few games and came in relief in some games too as well. But that's, you know, even though we talked about wide receivers first, this one probably might have more impact than anything just because, obviously you want to protect the quarterback, right? So, this is going to be very interesting to watch and to see, you know, who is that left tackle with Orlando Brown out or, you know, if he ever shows up, you know, whatnot. But you know, at this point, we kind of just got to move forward and see who we have in camp to see what we got. But I think I'm kind of more interested to see a lot to see what goes on with that because that, like I said, that will affect our team a lot just because of obviously how much we pass. But good points on, I would say, all the guys we have as far as who we got starting and then some of those key depth guys, because that will be a lot of, cuts we got to make that probably some of them we don't want to cut for that. But good thing we have a little bit of depth again, like we did last year, right? So that's also good. So, moving on to what would you think probably be one of our other positions that might be looked forward to seeing?
Yeah, I mean, and this is going to be an all-encompassing answer because I think defensively, right? I mean, we've overhauled the defense. We got younger, faster. That was the idea. Overall, cheaper as well. So what happens with Karlaftis, right? Is Karlaftis stepping in opposite of Frank Clark from day one? What about Trent McDuffie? And which now I'm double checking, like Trent McDuffie. I always feel like I'm saying his name wrong as well.
No, you got it right. That's right.
Yeah, for some reason, I don't know why. Like I always think about. Trying to think of who else I think about with the name Trent and with the last name McDuffie. And I'm always like double checking. But anyways, So I think it's that, right? It's just what happens on defense, right? What does this new defense look like? I mean, again, right? Younger, faster from an on-the-field perspective. So what happens with Karlaftis? Where does Trent McDuffie play. Is he? I mean, he could technically line up out wide. You know, he can shadow the best receiver, but the Chiefs don't really do that. Oh, I mean, I guess they mix it up, right? But because L'Jarius Sneed moved around a little bit too, and then Charvarius was usually always on the outside, didn't play much a nickel as Rashard Fenton did. But then even from a safety perspective, right? You got Reed, Thornhill. You drafted the rookie in Cook from Cincinnati. You brought in Deion Bush to replace the old famous 49. But even to linebacker, right? We know that, let's say, Nick Bolton is our Mike. He's our run-stopping linebacker. I've been reading that he's also gotten a little thinner just to help with his movement ability and coverage. You've got Willie Gay, who is pretty pissed off at his Madden rating since it's really low.
Yeah.
And then we've got another high-round pick, right, in Leo Chenault. You know, that was a really highly rated linebacker. So what does he do? You've got Jermaine Carter, who we got from the Panthers. So again, right, it's just the only thing I guess we know for sure on defense is that we'll be in a 4-3. Chris Jones will be playing inside, so no more experiment on the outside. You've got Frank Clark and some other defensive end. You've got Rashard Fenton. You've got L'Jarius Sneed. And I think that's really it on the for sure, because even Juan Thornhill, right, he was kind of in the doghouse at the beginning of the last year. That's why Daniel Sorensen played so much. So, yeah, it's just there's so much to learn about this defense, what it looks like, what it evolved to. And I think we have to do the same thing we did last year with be patient. This defense is probably going to go through a learning curve because it's full of younger guys that are faster, more aggressive than, let's say, maybe what we've been in the past. So, again, just where is everyone playing and how does that defense evolve as the year goes on?
Yeah, even though, you know, we talked about defense last and there's so much to look forward to. I like how you broke it down as defense as a whole, because really it's like you just said, we've gotten younger, faster, more physical, you know, on the defensive side. And I think Chiefs fans are going to really like this defense this year. I mean, obviously it's too early to predict how well this defense could be, but I think speed always plays a factor in how NFL plays compared to the college game. You got to have that speed to be able to, you know, make plays happen. And on defense, we've seen that also tackling too, right? And then, you know, recent memory, we have not been able to, you know, always have that where, you know, obviously we had Anthony Hitchens, and obviously he's great, right? But, you know, he's getting slower with age and just some of the other guys. I mean, Tyrann Mathieu, he was great, but, you know, his tackling wasn't that good last year as opposed to, you know, previous years. So, you know, getting some of these younger players, these guys are hungry, right? I mean, like, outside of the defense that you look at here, besides what you just mentioned, Chris Jones and Frank Clark, who were, like, you know, really good veterans we have on that defense, outside of that, everybody else on this team is very young. So this is going to be very exciting to see. I know you did mention George Karlaftis, but it'd be interesting to see that battle, right, with the other end, because obviously we know Frank Clark's on one side, but is it going to be Karlaftis? Is it going to be Mike Dana? Is it going to be Joshua Cadone? Or is it going to be, you know, maybe, like I said, Malik Herring, who sat out? I mean, so there's people on that one that could, you know, fill that. I mean, obviously, I think Karlaftis has slided in there because of how high he was. He's a first-round pick, right? So you think he's going to probably start or at least get some snaps in there. But that's probably one of the more interesting battles, because it's always, even lately, right, it's getting to the quarterback. And obviously you saw Frank Clark struggle with that last year, you know, whether he was injured a little bit or not. He struggled with it. That Chris Jones experiment where he tried to put him on the other side just didn't pan out. So, you know, I think that kind of looked forward to the most. But like I said, also that secondary that's pretty obviously new, and a lot of people we drafted that area also. I think I don't know if you mentioned Joshua Williams too as well. You know, he looked like he was a steal in the fourth round. So, you know, what happens there? But yeah, overall, there's just so much to talk about on defense. It's kind of hard to, you know, kind of go over all in one inch, but it's exciting just to see where our defense goes from here.
Well, and one thing that it would be interesting to see how they play in and, you know, what happens. So just talking about the secondary, right, we lost Sam Madison, our defensive backs coach. He went to where he used to play at in Miami. So he is down there in Miami. And to me, he is one of the biggest reasons why we've had some cornerbacks technically outperform their status, right? Like Ward, Fenton, and Legarius Sneed, right? So Dave Mayer is a name that is pretty well known within, let's say, not only the Chiefs organization, but let's say the secondary coaching. So I don't think they went from a really good cornerbacks coach to a not so good one. But then there's the other guy, as in Matt Nagy, right? So Matt Nagy comes back to the Chiefs. I think having all that brain power on an offense that is going through an identity change, right, where we're wanting Mahomes to stay in the pocket a little bit more, protect him. That's why we invested everything that we have on the offensive line. And then you bring in completely different offensive targets than what he's had in the past. So, yeah, I think all of those are just good things to see, not only in training camp, but just as the year evolves.
I agree. And then as training camp goes on, I mean, it's just going to be, you know, you're going to hear like, this person made an outstanding catch, or like, this person made a great interception, just all that stuff. So it's going to be, you know, all that stuff coming in the next few weeks to, you know, kind of get us going and revved up for preseason and the record season. So,
one question for you, just right off the top of my head, putting you on the spot. If there is one guy that's on the bubble for you that you'd really like to see make this team, who would it be?
Oh, man. Well, it goes back to the running backs. I think it's
Isaiah Pacheco.
Yes. Yes, Pacheco. He was one of the guys I always forget how to pronounce his last name, right? So, Pacheco. Yeah, that's the main guy I focus on, because I just think – I'm not trying to really compare him to what I'm about to do, but – I think he has a possibility of being something like that. Just I don't know if he has the quite the talent or something we hadn't seen yet. But he could. I would think like maybe he might turn into Jamal Charles. Like, I mean, he has the ability that possibly I don't know. I just have that feeling just by watching his tape and everything else. Like he could be pretty good. But that would be my guy, I would say.
Nice. So I really like him. I mean, you know, we talked about him in the draft process. Fastest running back in this draft, a 7th round pick. But the guy, yeah, the guy's violent. He played for a Rutgers team that was terrible. So it'll be nice. He's definitely be, you know, a guy to watch in training camp. For me, it's Cornell Powell. I've liked him since his senior year at Clemson. You know, last year we kept him on the practice squad. I know, you know, usually these early camp highlights or whatever aren't that big because everyone's not in full football mode or whatever. I mean, I know these guys are pros. They stay in shape and all that stuff. But hopefully that's a constant that we see, is Cornell Powell making plays. Now he has all the ability in the world. Speed probably isn't his best thing, but he's a great route runner. Great route runner at the college level, had great hands, and that's a constant that we've heard about. So for me, that is who I would like to take that last wide receiver spot.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with all the uncertainty of who is our 3rd, 4th, 5th wide receiver, you know, maybe he can slide into one of those.
Yeah. I mean, I hope so too, just because, you know, last year we had high hopes, right? We thought he might be all the way through a slot receiver, you know, and past Robinson. But, you know, I guess, like I said, he kind of struggled, you know, in training camp and also preseason. So they kind of felt he wasn't ready yet. But yeah. I would like to see him make the team too as well. I totally agree with you, that being either that 5th or 6th slot on the team. All right, so leading into our final thoughts segment for today, kind of goes back to the offensive line, and obviously the big news, you know, in recent weeks for this the Chiefs and overall is the Orlando Brown Jr. Contract talks. So, you know, it's been a big thing. It's, you know, obviously, I think I can't exactly remember the whole details, but I know we offered him. What is it, the exact? Do you know the exact number we offered him as contract?
I have to pull it back up. I'm sure I can pull it up while we keep chatting.
Yeah, but I know it was.
I was dying.
As you pulled it up, it was pretty high. I mean, for obviously he wanted to be paid for one of the best tacklers in the game right now. And his performance last year didn't really measure up to what I think he kind of wanted, as far as a contract wise. And I think the Chiefs are pretty reasonable as far as what they offered him. So yeah, I think that's just the, you know, the big thing. And that's why, you know, we signed 2 tackles today. We're going to be pretty much trying out different scenarios to see what we're going to do for the left tackle position, because he's basically said he's not reporting the training camp. So, you know, is he going to sit out this year? You know, is he ever going to sign his franchise tag, which is still a lot. Wouldn't the franchise tag, I want to say, is like $20 million or something like that, or maybe 18, somewhere in that range, but it's still a lot for 1 year. So what are your thoughts on the situation?
So for me, I mean, I couldn't find the exact numbers quickly, but I have so many thoughts with it, right? So obviously when we first traded for him, you know, the idea was sign and trade. You know, I even talked about if we can strike while the iron is hot, get him signed within a few days of trading, boom, you know, it's a good faith. Both parties are happy. He's smart on his end, right? I'm always a player's advocate first, because the team will drop you in a second, right?
Right.
With that being said, he was, let's say, healthy for the most part. He did okay. He wasn't great, wasn't terrible. Like I said, he was slightly above good.
Mm-hmm.
So you want him there, because I'm a believer in, so one, the offensive line has to have chemistry, and I think they did, especially by the end of the year. They were a top five offensive line. It's hard to find a good left tackle. Like I said, he's a good one. I don't know about great. You know, maybe this year would have been that year where he comes out 2 full years in the left tackle role with a consistent organization, because when he was in Baltimore, right, he played right tackle. When Ronnie Stanley got hurt, he moved to left tackle. So for me, this was going to be, you know, like his big prove it year, or if it was his first year of a big deal. So there's the player side of it, which I get. You know a number in your head. You know, he's gone back and forth between representing himself, you know, or getting an agent. Last I read, his agent, and he has an agent. And the number that the Chiefs presented, I think, was about an average salary of $23 million a year, which would make him the highest paid, you know, left tackle at the moment. Now, maybe it's not overall, like in comparison to Teron Armstead or even Trent Williams. But, I mean, to be honest, right, he's not at that level. Those guys, those are the top two left tackles probably in the game. Trent Williams, for sure, maybe the best left tackle of all time.
Right. And you remember, so, the Chiefs almost got Trent Williams. At least that was who they got. They were trying to go after at first. And he ended up signing with San Francisco.
So, and I think at the end of the day, it wasn't a Trent Williams it wasn't a money thing with the Chiefs. It was more, which, I mean, I know that we were different. San Francisco offered more, you know, and maybe he just wanted to live in San Francisco. He liked the lifestyle living in San Francisco compared to Kansas City. Being a Houston guy, likes a big city. So who knows, right? But the contract we offered Orlando Brown, to your point, seems more than appropriate for a guy that, you know, is supposedly ranked, from what I saw, PFF had him ranked as the 28th best offensive tackle, and that's regardless of left or right. And I think for the most part, in all the readings I've done, he is somewhere between 10 to 18 on left tackles, right? So, you know, to me, top five left tackles, if there are 32 teams, you obviously have 32 left tackles. Not all of them are good, but let's say in order to be elite, you need to be in the, let's say, top five, right?
Right.
Of that group. And he's more usually in between, like I said, 10 to 20, let's say, to be safe. More along the lines of like 15, 16. So that's middle of the road to me. And we were offering him really good money. So like I said, as a Chiefs fan, from a team perspective, seems like we did, it was more than a fair offer. And it was a big one, right? I think it was 6 years. So I thought in my head that they'd maybe do like something fully guaranteed, maybe like 3 years, $75 million, $25 million every year.
Right.
Something short with a lot of guarantee. But no, it was different, right? We offered like 6 years. I think the guaranteed was like 60, 70. I think it was 60. But again, right, an average of about $23 million a year. So I think, I'm still a believer that I think what's going to happen is once football starts happening, he'll start missing it more, and this deal will make more sense to him. And maybe we'll find a way to slide a little bit, you know, an extra million or two, or add something to the contract that makes it a little bit more attractive to him. But I do believe that come, maybe not week one, but I would say week four, he should be back with the Chiefs. I want to say by the start of the season, he'll be ready and he'll be, you know, back on the team. But yeah, that's at least my initial wants and obviously thoughts.
Yeah. So actually I didn't end up pulling the actual number. So I had some time when you were talking. The Chiefs offered him a 6-year, $139 million deal. It includes a $30.25 million signing bonus, which you were pretty much right. It came out to about $23 million a year. And that would have actually surpassed Trent Williams for the Niners' total value as contract. So, yes, it was very generous what the Chiefs had given to him for, for his play and all that. But, I think eventually he's going to end up going to sign his franchise tag too as well. I think you're right. I think he'll start missing football. And, there's nothing wrong with signing that franchise tag too, because, he could come back and say, hey, I'm going to sign this franchise tag. And he's going to bet on himself, and he's going to, play the heck out of the season. And then, revisit that next year, and then see how is the Chiefs going to still offer him that contract next year, something similar, whether it be less or more, we'll see. But there's nothing also wrong with that. But obviously, like I said, on the player standpoint, most players, or if not all players, they want a long term deal, right? Injuries are involved, even though I think a lot of players have those injury settlements that they sign just in case something like that happens. But they like to always have, they know where they're going to stay for the next year, 6 years, right? They don't want to be on the franchise tag year by year and do that too as well. So like I said, on the player side, it's always makes sense. But also on an organization side, can you really, what can you really give that you're not breaking the bank, right? Too as well. As you see with the Patrick Mahomes contract, yeah, was it huge? But, the more and more of all these quarterbacks are signing these deals, it's looking like a steal. So for his contract and whatnot going forward. So there's always, just like I said, there's always that business side of it too as well. So, but like you said, I think, ultimately he'll come back, whether it's, late training camp, in the preseason, or, within the first 4 weeks of the year.
And here's the other thing, right, is let's say, which it always happens. I mean, obviously Drew Bledsoe, Wally Pipp, all those guys. Now he's not hurt, but let's say somebody balls out a left tackle throughout preseason. I get it's preseason, but practice will be a better indicator of that.
Right.
The Chiefs may end, which I guess at the end of the day, that's okay for Orlando Brown as well, because the Chiefs will then maybe want to trade him and someone else will pay him. But, the discussion we've had is, if someone does trade for him, it's going to be a team that's not good. The Jets have three tackles that they could technically start. But then let's say you send them to Detroit has two good tackles. Most of the teams that can afford to pay it, let's say the Jaguars, right? They just signed their franchise tag, Cobb Robinson. So they're only tied to him for another year. So if you're going to go to a team that's going to be able to pay you the money you want, they're probably not going to be good. So, and that's what ends up happening to these players, right? It's you want to make a lot of money and potentially maybe not have a good team, or do you want to maybe have, and we call it team friendly, when in reality, they're not really team friendly. The Patriots are the only ones that really had team friendly contracts throughout all their runs. But the contract that Chiefs offered him was still market resetting. So you were going to make him the highest paid left tackle in the game for the year, right? Because everything's relevant to the year.
Correct.
So it's one of those things of where's that balance at? So, like I said, I mean, he's the only one who knows. Everything I've been reading is he's obviously still in shape, ready to go as soon as, let's say, they come to an agreement, or he signs a franchise, or, whatever he does with the franchise tag. I don't know, but like I said,
at this point, they can't do an agreement. It's either he signs the franchise tag, or they trade him, or he sits out. I mean, that's the three options right now.
So, yeah, so it's one of those where it's like, I think the Chiefs have the upper hand as long as our left tackle isn't terrible. If our left tackle is terrible, then it's going to be interesting. Then who knows how it goes from there. But I think the Chiefs definitely, I think it's a little bit different than Tyreek Hill.
Correct.
A left tackle is the second most important position on the field. So, ideally I would love for him to be here come, in 2 weeks or something like that, so he gets some practice time, so he's not shaking off rust. But that's something we'll definitely have to follow.
I will say real quickly though, in some aspect, if the Chiefs did trade him, right, they're probably going to get multiple picks for him, I would think. I guess that would be one hindsight of it. If it just doesn't work out, and maybe the Chiefs can trade them, they'll get obviously some some of those picks back that they got from the Ravens. I mean, maybe not, obviously not the exact picks, right? But like, you know, maybe get a few picks for this next draft where they can move up, you know, and get the future left tackle in the next draft. I mean, what are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I think at best the Chiefs will get two picks. I think a second is a first to me is completely out of the question. Because why would a team trade for a mid-tier left tackle and pay him 20-something million when you can draft a mid-tier tackle in a position that's constantly coming out 3 to 4 or 5 players in the first round every year?
Right.
Pay him $5 million a year for the next 4 years and be good. You know, so then on the opposite end of that with draft picks is I think – so we gave up a late one for him. He was a third round pick. So I think his average, at best, you can get a second round pick, which again would be from a terrible team. And then they throw in some fifth, sixth round either this year or next year. So it's one of those where I think at best the Chiefs can get a second. I think a third is probably more realistic. And if we get another pick in there, I think that's probably as good as it's gonna get. Unless it's a 3 and like 2 sixes for the next 2 years, you know, which sixes or sixes, you know. So
well, it also depends on what team wants them, right? I mean, what team would needs them more? I'd say a second for sure, but I mean, I would think in maybe a fourth, possibly, obviously a fifth, but I just depends on what team really wants them, really needs them that bad too. But I agree. Something like 2 picks.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting one to follow. And like I said, as camp comes out, which I haven't read anything about what's happening at left tackle, so that's one to follow and watch.
Yeah, well, and I think we'll have some updates next week when we discuss some more stuff on from the first week. So we'll have more to talk about on that left tackle situation for sure. All right, so that will actually conclude today's edition of the Red and Yellow Kingdom podcast. Like I said, we'll actually be back next week for our kind of weekly training camp discussion or anything else related to Chiefs news sometime next week. So thanks again for everyone listening. Don't forget to follow our podcast and go Chiefs.